Welcome back to Listen in Wonder. In Season 1, we explored the many ways God speaks to us through whispers, scripture, prayer, and unexpected moments that remind us He's near. This season, we're turning our attention to a theme that touches every one of us at some point in life, God's presence in our suffering. Suffering is never easy, whether it's physical, emotional, mental, or spiritual. But in the middle of pain and questions, we believe God's presence surrounds us, holds us, and even transforms us. This season, we'll listen to real stories from women who've walked through seasons of suffering. We'll ask them, what was helpful, what wasn't? How did God meet them in their pain? And how did community play a role in reminding them they weren't alone? Our hope is that these conversations will meet you right where you are, offering comfort, courage, and confidence, no matter the circumstances. You are surrounded by wonder.
Welcome back to Listen in Wonder. We have been on a bit of a break since last year, but we are super excited to come back with season 2 of our podcast. It has been a really sweet space to sit and listen with guests who are seeking after God, seeking after hearing His voice, trusting that His presence is with us. And so we are really excited to kick off season 2 today. It will be a little bit different from last year in that we have picked a topic. Well, I wouldn't say we picked it. Let me tell you, the Lord picked it. Last year, we talked about listening to God's voice. And in a moment of reflection with God on that topic, I believe I heard Him say, "The reason you have to listen for my voice is because I want you to know I'm present in suffering." And I like to dialogue with the Lord. And so I remember saying to the Lord, "I don't know who is going to want to sit in the topic of suffering." And you guys, the sweetest conversations have already started. They continue just to amaze me about how important this topic is and how relevant it is to so many people who really, really just need to know with confidence that God is present, even when suffering is not all wrapped up, oftentimes not wrapped it up in a neat little package with a great bow on it. But what we can gain is this confidence that no matter the circumstances, we are surrounded by wonder. As I sat with the Lord on this topic, I read from the book of Psalms in chapter 125, verse 2. It says, "As the mountains surround Jerusalem, the Lord surrounds His people, both now and forevermore." And I think that's what you're going to hear today, is that we do have a God that surrounds us, both now and forevermore. And so I'm excited to share with you today's guest. If this is your first time listening, we do have a great season 1 that you should probably check out. But my name is Barbara Gradke, and I am a minister at the Hills Church. I believe the Lord entrusted me to lead the Hills women, and it has been an honor and privilege every single day. So today, I don't come to you by myself. I'm coming with a friend from our Keller campus. We are one church with 4 campuses, and I love getting to know people from all of our campuses. But I have a friend with me today, and I want to tell you a little bit about her before I tell you her name. She came to our staff years ago to teach our staff or begin a conversation about active listening and having empathy. I was so amazed at some of the things that she was saying that I went up to her after and I said, I mean, it's kind of stalker-like, because I remember going up and saying, "My name is Barbara. I need your phone number. We need to go to lunch." And so because she's a kind person, she didn't take that as a stalker. She actually gave me her number and we went to lunch and we sat at a table for hours, you guys. And what I remember about that day a few years ago is sitting with her. She was telling me her story. I was telling her a little bit about my story. And the thing that kept us at the table is that we could sit in awe as we would share the hard things that had gone on in our lives, but that we could testify that God had been present the whole time, that his presence had been beautifully woven through both of our stories. So I'm excited to introduce you to my friend, and will soon be your friend, I promise, Brenda McAdoo. Brenda, thank you for being here today.
You are so welcome. I am excited that I did say yes to your stalker-like question about my number, and just to be able to walk through some hard things with you, but also to walk through joys.
Yes.
Over the years.
Yes, both. I would say both. And I want you to take just a few minutes. What do you want to tell our listeners about Brenda McAdoo? Like, who is Brenda? How would you answer that question?
Well, identity shouldn't be wrapped up in just who we are, right? But whose we are.
Yes.
And so I'm a preacher's kid. Mm-hmm. I'm a wife. I'm a mother. I'm passionate about understanding people where they are. Mm-hmm. And so having my own story helps. That day when we met, just being able to tell our stories, mm-hmm. I think creates a space where we can feel heard.
Yes.
And we can show somebody else that we understand and hear them. Mm-hmm. And that's what community is all about. And so telling our stories is not always easy.
Yeah, it's not. And I think I remember, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I remember you telling me that day at lunch, your parents went to be missionaries.
Yes. So preacher's kid growing up. But when I was in law school, my parents called me one day and they said, hey, you probably should come home and hear your dad's last sermon because we're moving to Kenya, which is an amazing, wonderful thing for them. But I was an only child.
Right.
So they went off to the mission field for 30 years and did some amazing things for God's kingdom. But I was, left back home.
That was one of the first things I think that struck me about God's presence in your story is that you were at an age where technically, like you were an adult, but also probably feeling like everything I've known to be of comfort, yeah. right, is moving halfway across the world.
Yeah, adult-ish.
Adult-ish, right. I know. Emerging yeah. adults is what I yeah. learned to call them as my kids became adults, is that it takes a season of learning how to do that well. Part of your story is that even as a young adult, you were learning to do life with the Lord just because he was the one that was there.
Yeah, to be able to trust in the plan and purpose for our lives and to be able to keep going, right? I think that resilience is something we need to talk about in mm-hmm. right these discussions around suffering
yeah.
and around where we are.
Yeah. So that's like a foundational thing I'm thinking right now about some of the things we're going to talk about in your story mm-hmm. is that season and what the Lord did and how he met you there is foundational to some of the things that you went through next, which tell our listeners a little bit about, you're a mom of five.
I am.
So I want you to tell our listeners a little bit about your family.
Okay. So I'm a mom of five, but I'm a biological mom of three and a bonus mom for two.
Okay.
So I'm divorced. Part of my story is that I'm so thankful that God gave me a second chance at love, mm. right? And that family. Mm-hmm. And so when the kids were really young, they were 99873.
Oh. Say that again.
99873. My husband and I got married. And
that's how you know he really loves you.
Yeah. And they are adult-ish now, four of them, and one still at home. Mm. But the journey has been amazingly wonderful. And yeah. God has shown up in so many ways in our family.
Yeah. So would you say, because I know you and we're friends and I know your story, but you've had multiple seasons of suffering.
Yeah. And I think that that's one of the things that, you know, we read the verse that, you know, God doesn't promise you right? Mm-hmm. Everything. And that everything's going to be happy all the time. And then it's going to always work out.
In this world, you will have trouble.
Yeah. You will have suffering.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's borne out in all of our lives in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say, on one hand, I would say I haven't always been through hard things because I know that there's tons of people who have been through worse things.
Mm-hmm.
And so perspective, I think, is important for us. But I have been through hard seasons. Mm-hmm. And One of them was physical, which to me was the hardest time for me in the suffering. Yeah.
I remember when I was younger, Brenda, just hearing a woman, a seasonal life ahead of me, talk about her suffering. And she said, that's when true intimacy with the Lord developed for me. And as a young person who hadn't really gone through any seasons of suffering yet, I thought to myself, well, I really want that intimacy with the Lord, but can I just get there without the suffering?
Without the suffering, yeah.
And I just remember kind of thinking that's really unfair. Like, I mean, was what my heart was thinking. But now, I mean, that was probably a good 25, 30 years ago. And I understand it more now because of who God is and how he's shown up for me. So I think what I want you to tell our listeners is your story about physical suffering and how that started. Like, yeah, I'm going to let you go. And then I will try not to interrupt you too much.
To your point, I think that one of the things that I said when I was younger is I'm not sure I have a testimony because I grew up in the church. Mm-hmm. I never walked away. I went to a Christian college. I stayed in the church. And so I almost felt like the older brother in the prodigal son story where I have been here and been faithful. And I didn't feel like I had a testimony like a lot of other people did. Mm-hmm. Well, I have a testimony now.
Yes.
And I think that God answers that in not always the way that we expect.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because there's purpose in the things that happen to us, even if we can't see it at the time.
Yeah.
Okay. So my story.
Yeah. Yes.
I spent a lot of years growing up as an athlete. I played basketball. I was super active with my family, with my job, and I wore out my knee. It wasn't any one thing where I got an injury, but I wore out my knee with all of the activity and job. And so I had to have knee surgery and I was having a total knee replacement at a, what I would consider a very young age.
So this to most people. You are a blended family.
Blended family.
And how old are your kids when you're having this knee replacement?
The kids are now, so it would have been 4 years, well, maybe just 3.5 years from the time we got married.
Okay.
So now they are 6 and 10 and 11 and 13, 13. Okay. So still very young.
Very busy stage of life.
Extremely. So
nobody's driving.
Nobody's driving.
Activities. I want to
sell multiple activities
for this.
My husband and I both work full time.
Yeah.
My parents live overseas.
Okay. Yep. They're still in Kenya.
Yeah. They're still in Kenya. They came back summers to be with the kids. They came back at Christmas. We spent time over there doing mission trips, had lots of time with them. But yes, it was a super busy time of life. But I have to have a knee replacement. Knee replacements are very common. Mm-hmm. People are up and walking that same day. Then they go home from the hospital and they're doing rehab and then they can even run after.
Right.
Like that's where I thought and again, still working full time. My husband works full time. And so I went into surgery with the thought that, man, in like 6 to 8 weeks, I might be running again or playing basketball. Mm-hmm. So I still coached the kids' teams because I had played my whole life. And during the surgery, my knee was already out and the doctor slipped with the drill. Mm. So if I just set the stage, so when he slipped with the drill, it went through the femur, through the popliteal artery, through the popliteal vein, and just destroyed the knee.
Yeah.
So thankfully, again, God being present, God present in all the spaces, he put a tourniquet on and saved my life.
Wow.
But then I was in a hospital without emergency surgeries because these are so common. Mm-hmm. So they had to transport me to a trauma level hospital. My husband had to follow behind in the car while I was in the ambulance being transported. I wasn't awake during any of this. A vascular surgeon then had to repair the vascular, you know, all the arteries and veins to save my leg. Mm. And then the knee finished, right? Because they still were doing that. When I woke up, it was probably 36 hours later.
Wow.
I woke up in a different hospital. I didn't know where I was. I was in ICU. And over the next day or so, I developed a compartment syndrome, which your leg gets so swollen mm-hmm. due to all the inflammation that it almost splits the skin. So they have to cut it open on both sides.
Wow.
To the bone on both sides, knee to ankle. So I spent about 10 days in the ICU.
Okay.
And then I spent 19, I had 43 days in the hospital. I did 19 surgeries during those 43 days. So every other day I had surgery.
Every other day.
I got to have Christmas Eve off from surgery.
You were in the hospital that whole time?
Yeah. I was in the hospital 43 days the first time. And
I think the first time you told me that the story, I was so like wondering about all the things. I missed that detail.
Yeah. So I was in the hospital because
again, your kids are very, very young.
In
a very busy stage of life.
Yes. And so after I got out of the hospital, I actually developed a blood clot and had to go back into the hospital for more surgeries and then healing for that. During that time, I had a doctor tell me I probably would never walk again, which was devastating.
Yeah.
Especially for my job, for my family. Mm-hmm. And then when I came out of the hospital, I was in a wheelchair.
Okay.
So fast forward about a year, mm-hmm. I spent 1 year in physical therapy. I went every day to physical therapy. And then I also had open wounds because of the double fasciotomy. And so I had to go to wound care mm-hmm. when I wasn't in physical therapy.
Physical therapy.
And I might not have said it every day then, mm-hmm. but I can say now that God is good. And I think that that's something that we sometimes have to look back on to say. Mm-hmm. And so as I progressed from wheelchair to walker to cane, and today here we are about mm-hmm. 10 days later, I'm walking on my own, but I had to learn to walk again.
Wow.
And I went through a lot of pain. So I'll have chronic pain. I have horrendous scars. Mm-hmm. So sometimes if people see my scars, which I don't show very often, mm-hmm. But if they get to see them, they're like, oh my goodness, what happened? Mm-hmm. Sometimes depending on where we're at, cause I scuba dive, I sometimes mm-hmm. say shark bite, but I'm going right back to where it happened.
Yeah. So, right back.
Some people don't have scars on the outside.
That's right.
And some people do.
That's right.
Like all suffering leaves a mark on us. And God cares about that. And again, I might not have said that then, but I can say it now.
And I think that's why he impressed upon me why this conversation was so important.
Yeah.
Because it matters to him. And because some of it's visible to us or invisible to us, it's all visible to God.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Every bit of it is visible to him. Mm. Wow. For a minute, I want us to talk about, so many questions come to mind. Like I think about you opening your eyes and wondering, where am I? No, that's wild to me. But then a doctor saying, you're maybe never going to walk again. You're still laying there processing all of this. And so in those moments of processing, will you share with us moments of doubt and fear or isolation? I mean, just share with us. I'm laughing that I'm saying share with us your feelings, because I know Brenda well enough that she would be like, my husband can share feelings, but I'm not sure I can't. No, you can. You can. But share with us just what was that like? Having those moments of doubts or fear as you're laying there wondering, what is life going to be like post-surgery? It's certainly not what I thought it was going to be like.
No. And I think I did some writing to the kids because I didn't know what tomorrow would look like. For the very first time in my entire life, I thought that it might not turn out the way that I wanted, or I might not survive one of the surgeries.
Right.
Or...
yeah, any other day.
A million things. And so I did do some writing to the kids of letters just in case. Mm-hmm. I didn't.
Do you still survive those?
I do. And hopefully they will not see them for a very long time. Mm-hmm. But I also internalized a lot of that fear and the doubt. Not that I didn't have people I could share it with.
Right.
Because I do feel like I was surrounded. My husband spent an entire 43 days at the hospital as well. Like every moment I woke up, he was there. Mm-hmm. And that was an anchor for me.
Sure.
But I also internally started coming up with lists that I later wrote down and I called them.
Yeah. Tell us about these lists.
I call them I can't lists. And if you have access to my phone in the notes, it has pages and pages that I would write every week, the things I couldn't do anymore.
Like, give us some examples.
I can't run. I can't coach basketball. I can't go up the stairs to read my kids a book at night. Mm-hmm. I can't, everything that I couldn't do. I can't bend down to pick up my kids' toys anymore. Mm-hmm. I can't chase them across the floor if they've fallen and gotten hurt. Mm-hmm. Things that deeply mattered to me that I felt inadequate because of my situation then.
So will you share with us, like, what's going on in your heart as you're writing those things down? Like, are you sad? Are you mad? Like, what kind of feelings are you feeling as you're writing those things?
I think I was, from the very beginning, I was intentional about not being bitter or resentful for my situation. Mm-hmm. And part of that's the forgiveness story for the doctor, right? But for me, I wasn't mad at God. I was mad at the result.
Okay.
And I don't know how I kept myself from being mad at God, because mm-hmm. that's entirely normal and natural. And, but that's not how it came out for me. I felt, mad about the circumstance. I felt cheated. Mm-hmm. Actually, I think mm-hmm. is the word. Mm-hmm. I felt cheated out of what life could have been. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what it was going to look like.
Yeah.
And so I felt robbed. I felt like I needed to sit with that.
Yeah.
And I think I didn't share it because I know my friends, my husband, my family care so much about me during that time that they might have stopped me from writing those mm-hmm. lists. But it's something I needed.
Yeah.
Not to be negative or dark, but to be real. Mm-hmm. And I think we need in suffering the ability to be real with ourselves, with God. And then to be able to navigate through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that you have shared that with us, because you and I've talked a lot, and we know that looks different for every person, right? And so for you, it needed to be, hey, this is just something I'm working on. Another person going through the same physical type of suffering might need something different. And it's okay, whatever each person needs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, will you tell us a little bit about your decision to forgive the doctor and how that came about and what you did about it?
I was about 2 weeks in to my hospital stay and I realized that I couldn't change my circumstances, but I could choose my response to them.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think that was kind of the push to me to then, okay, what are the steps? How do we survive this from a thought process, a mental outlook, a mindset? And I think a little bit of that for me was, maybe this is more for me than for him. Mm-hmm. And so the doctor who made the mistake, he actually came to see me every night when he got done with his rounds.
I was just about to ask you that.
He didn't do any more of the surgeries, mm-hmm. but he still stayed involved because he knew best what had happened. Mm-hmm. And so he was at every one of my surgeries, as an observer and help. And then he would come to see me each night. So one night, about 2 weeks in, he came to see me, and I was never alone. I was in a step down 24-hour unit with nurses 24 hours and my mm-hmm. husband. For some reason, again, God, I was by myself when he came in. And so, you know, you don't touch your doctor. Like, it's just an unwritten rule, I think. but I reached up with my hand when he came to check on me, and I touched his hand and I said, I just want you to know that I've forgiven you. Mm. And he stepped back and got really still. And then he turned around and left. And I don't know what I expected in that moment.
But probably not that.
Probably not that. But here's the rest of the story. Hey. So about 4 months later,
four months later,
I'm out of the hospital. And I would see him periodically for a checkup, even though he was no longer my doctor over my care. And I was in his office and he stopped me and he said, "Do you remember that night when you said you forgave me?" And I was like, "Yeah,
yeah, I do.
And he stopped and he said, "I want you to know that that changed my life. I decided if that lady could forgive me,
oh wow,
I had to start forgiving people in my own life."
Wow.
And so I think sometimes the waiting is really hard. Mm-hmm. And we might never know the impact,
right,
of our suffering on others.
Well, and I think this is, again, the list is long of why this conversation is so important, right? That if we will be with people in their suffering, there's so much purpose in it. It's not one purpose. It can't be defined in one purpose. There's so much purpose. You said when you started that little section of your story about forgiveness, "I realized it was more for me than him. And yet," so you would probably say, "Yes, it is a part of my healing is that I was able to do that."
It
had impact on him, and yet it had impact on people that he's now forgiving, that there's no explanation besides "this woman forgave me. I didn't deserve it." You know, all of the interwovenness of God's presence in this story is beautiful.
There's a lot of research about secondhand trauma that happens for people that experience trauma with others. There's also secondhand healing. Mm. And I think that God's in that space, mm-hmm. that we don't know the impact it's going to have on others when we go through hard things.
Wow. Wow. That's so beautiful. And I think one of the things that I want our listeners to hear is this was not overnight.
No. And frankly, I had to choose to forgive him again and again and again, because every time I would look down at my leg or have more pain or another surgery, right? Then I'd have to choose to forgive again. Mm-hmm. And I still have a daughter who's mad at the doctor.
Yeah.
All these years later, because of, she felt the wrong, right? Mm-hmm. That was done to her mama.
Yeah.
And, we have to continue to choose the good things in our life, to choose to trust, to choose to forgive.
Yeah.
And it's not a one-time and done thing. And wow, look, I did that. It's a continual, intentional choice. Yeah.
I think another part of your story that will expand on this is when you were back at church, you were in a wheelchair.
Yes.
And will you share a little bit about that experience?
I think because of pride, job, identity, all those things, being an athlete, spending over 20 years in law enforcement, I had an identity wrapped up in I'm capable, I'm physically able, I'm an athlete. I mean, all the things wrapped up in, I can do all these things. And so sitting in a wheelchair and feeling pitied or feeling people having sympathy rather than empathy was very, very hard for me. And so to allow others to see my suffering and pain visibly, right, was really hard.
Yeah.
And so just showing up at church was really hard. And so sometimes I would sit and listen to the worship team, which I love worship in our church.
Yeah.
My daughter sang on the worship team for years while she was in middle school and high school. But a song would come on and it would be, "It Is Well With My Soul." And I couldn't sing. Mm. I couldn't sing the thing I had, you know, been able to sing my whole life.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't well with my soul. Mm-hmm. And I had to keep reminding myself that my suffering was not well with God's soul either. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I had to find a space where I could be with God, but it be okay that I didn't feel like it was well.
Yeah. And that you could be honest with him about that.
Yeah. To be angry or to be disappointed or to wonder why I wasn't healed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all those things. You know, the elders came in the hospital and put oil on me and prayed over me, and we prayed for healing and it didn't come. Right. And that's a hard place to wait in.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, what what would you say to somebody who is in that season?
Well, I certainly wouldn't say, at least it's not as bad as other people. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say suffer well. What I'd say is God's with you and mm-hmm. you're not alone.
Yeah.
And choose joy. Mm-hmm. Choose yeah. trust.
Because sometimes what I hear you saying is sometimes all you can do is look for his presence.
Yeah.
Like when you can't sing it as well, when you're upset, when you're disappointed, when you're having doubt or fear, like you can still look for his presence and find him.
Yeah. One of the best examples of that while I was in the hospital was Nino would come, who's a dear friend for many years. Nino would come with his guitar mm-hmm. and he would just sit for hours yeah. and sing and mm-hmm. play the guitar in my room. Mm-hmm. And he did it for me, but it turned out it wasn't for me. It wasn't, I probably wasn't in the spot to accept it or to live it, to be in that space.
But were you resistant to it? Do you feel like you were kind of resistant or?
I don't think I was resistant. It's Nino. I wasn't resistant, but I wasn't fully invested.
Okay.
But then I started to notice the nurses would stand in the doorway. Mm-hmm. And when they would come in, sometimes they had tears in their eyes. And those same nurses would stop by later and I would pray with them.
Yeah.
And those nurses that were impacted by God's mm-hmm. presence and his spirit and his words and his song mm-hmm. over them, mm-hmm. I got to see purpose.
Yeah.
Even if I didn't feel it, mm-hmm. even if I didn't know it at that moment, I got to see God's purpose in our suffering mm-hmm. because others were impacted by the kingdom.
Yeah. It just makes me think about what we read in scripture about that darkness can't overcome light. Like thinking about being in that hospital where nurses and doctors see a lot of hard things. You're even in a very hard, almost dark place.
Yeah.
And that light was there. And that promise that God tells us, even in darkness, you know, light will overcome it.
Yeah. I saw something recently, and it was a picture of a match, mm. and on the its reflection on the wall. Mm. The light doesn't have a shadow mm. on a yeah. wall because there's no shadow in the light.
Yeah.
And so you're right. Like it God figures out a way to show up for us, even if we're not looking, even if we're mm-hmm. not ready.
He's omnipresent. And sometimes I think we forget that.
And he knows us.
It's part of his nature is that he is present everywhere. And he wants us to know that he's in it with us for sure. Yeah. We're going a couple of places still with your story, but I am wondering, okay, so it was helpful for you to write down your I can't list and to keep that between you and the Lord.
Yeah.
And then it was helpful to have Nino come play worship music, but it more so maybe for you to see the purpose was beyond just you, right?
Yeah.
And I just wonder if you will answer the question of how would you say that God transformed you? How did he use this experience to transform you?
I think one of the biggest, you said earlier that it's sometimes hard for me to talk about my feelings mm-hmm. because I'm a doer uh-huh. and I'm very direct. I'm action oriented. One of the things that suffering, but also just chronic pain mm-hmm. has taught me is to be more compassionate to others. Mm. And so that transformation is something that I hope that God uses mm-hmm. in all the spaces where I have any kind of influence.
Yeah.
And so I think that being able to sit with people and listen to and to be empathetic towards pain instead of trying to fix it. Mm-hmm. And so that's been a transformation to me. Mm-hmm. I think I'm a lot more compassionate, but also able to give that empathy in a slower, softer way than I probably yeah. ever did. The other transformation, I think, is in trust. I have always loved God. Mm-hmm. I haven't always thought he had the right answers.
Yeah.
It's probably all of us.
God, have you thought about?
Yeah. We do this a little bit different. But to trust that his ultimate plan, and I'm not talking about, I'm so thankful someday I'll have a new body, which I am. Yeah. I'm looking forward to come, Lord Jesus. But that's, it's not that. Mm-hmm. It's the plan in the paired with purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I can't know if my leg's ever going to stop hurting, mm-hmm. or I can't know all those things. But what I can do is decide every day I'm going to seek his will.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I get the answer I want. And I think sometimes I was impatient mm-hmm. with God's answer or timing, mm-hmm. and I'm much more patient now with that. And so that's been a transformation that's helped me.
I think anytime somebody says what you just said, I may not get the answer, but I trust God. That's transformation. Yeah. I may not get the answer I desire, but I trust God. That's transformation. That's beautiful. Well, I'm going to ask you to define something, and it's sort of a teaser for the next episode, because I wanted to have you for two episodes because I knew it wouldn't be long enough. So, a teaser for episode two, we are going to be talking about how community comes alongside of us in our suffering well, or how they don't come alongside of us well. So you're going to have to listen next week to hear more of that conversation. But just to even get us there, would you define the difference in sympathy versus empathy?
Oh, absolutely. So sympathy, Brené Brown has some great stuff on empathy, mm-hmm. but one of the things that she says is sympathy like drives disconnection, because you feel sorry for people, what they're going through, or you can help them from afar. Mm-hmm. Empathy is really being able to both understand and sit with them mm-hmm. in emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Empathy doesn't have all the answers, but it just says you're not alone and I'm here with you.
Yeah.
And I don't like when they talk about empathy about, well, we can walk in somebody's shoes. Well, mm-hmm. we can't walk in anybody's shoes. I don't know. I can't fully understand all the things that you've gone through.
Yeah.
And I can't expect other people to fully understand what I've gone through. But what I do love to hear from other people is the, man, I'm just so glad that you told me
mm-hmm.
and I'm willing to walk through this with you.
Yeah.
And I think about that. That piece about how we walk well with people
mm-hmm.
is a lot about just stopping mm-hmm. and taking time to ask the next question, to show somebody that we're listening to them and that we care. And that's better for people than any dinner that we can bring them. Or, and those things are great.
You're reading my mind, because I'm like, sympathy drops off the meal.
Yes.
Right. But then gets in the car and is like, oh my word, I cannot even imagine that being my everyday. And empathy shares the meal. Like, I'm sitting with you through the meal, like whatever that looks like.
And then
like.
Is willing to help you to the bathroom or into the wheelchair or all the things.
Yeah.
Because you need to feel like you aren't pitied for what happened to you.
Mm-hmm.
You need to feel like you have somebody walking with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I want us to close, Brenda, with you had shared with me a scripture that has anchored you. And so would you share that with our listeners and how that has helped you?
Absolutely. I think for me, there's a million scriptures that come to mind, mm-hmm. but really a lot of this comes bound to a choice.
Mm-hmm.
A choice to forgive, a choice to find joy, a choice to give people grace when they don't always say the right thing
mm-hmm.
when you're going through hard stuff. And so the verse that comes to mind for me is Joshua 24:15. And what we usually quote about this scripture is, you know, choose this day whom you will serve.
Mm-hmm.
And then we skip to the next part and it says, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord, mm-hmm. kind of as a declaration.
Yeah.
But the beginning of 15 says, but if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve.
Mm-hmm.
It is not always easy to choose to serve, to choose to be part of God's plan and purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be intentional about choosing every day to choose joy, to choose trust, to choose God. Mm-hmm. And I want at the end of my life to say that I didn't just give a declaration that my family is going to serve God. I chose every day to walk with him, no matter the suffering, mm-hmm. in spite of the suffering.
And that I'm picturing that is above your front door before you walk out. Is that right? You have a scripture above your door.
When things get hard,
out,
fall on your knees is above the front door.
Okay.
But it's all the choose this day is on a wall in the living room.
Yeah. So your family has been living with it. It impacted you, but it also is something that is a visible part of your family's every day.
Yeah.
Mm, that's beautiful. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. Thank you so much for being transparent in how difficult this has been and still is. And so, listeners, we're going to ask that you come back and join us next week as we unpack more about how community can walk alongside people who are suffering. And Brenda is a great voice to talk into that. So we hope that you will join us next week. We also are wanting you to mark September 27th on your calendar. That is our Wonder Conference this year. This is where we are in preparation for that day, and we believe that the Lord will meet you in the space that you are in if you join us for Wonder Conference. Thank you. See you next week.